The Daily. Dave Hodgson.
Hey.
It is a daily here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, and I'm delighted to have on the line on Skype now. We're going to head over and speak to Gillian Butler on her book, Manage Your Mind. Good afternoon, Gillian. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well, Gillian. And just before we get on to the book itself, just to tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been doing this for quite, well, I don't want to give your age away or anything, but you've been doing this for a while now.
This is the third edition of this book, and I've done it together with a psychiatrist and another clinical psychologist. I'm a clinical psychologist, and the three of us have all had very wide experience of all sorts of aspects of psychology. So we've both been clinical psychologists and working in clinical practice. We've done research, we've done lots of teaching, lots of training of professionals. So we have broad, very, very broad experience of the area.
And you worked in Oxford University and National Health Service as well?
Both of those, yes.
So what was your role there at Oxford?
I was worked for nearly 10 years doing research in cognitive behavioural therapy and developing new treatments.
Wow. You've had an interesting life so far.
Very interesting. It's been a fabulously exciting road, really.
you say this book's been out before, so is it a reprint, reissue?
No, it's completely rewritten, new edition.
Right, okay.
New stuff.
Okay, good stuff. And as we head into this new year, people are thinking about this kind of stuff, about improving their lives and looking at themselves a bit more, maybe. It's a good time maybe to kind of readdress some of these issues.
Oh, I think it's a really excellent time to. Yes. And there's lots of stuff in the book to help people do that in all sorts of different ways. It's an interesting book in that it's not a single idea book. It's one of those books that makes use of anything, really, that we know to be effective from our research.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question from the onset here. As I've read your biography, your bio there, and as I've, not your biography, that might be another book for later on, but as I've read that and also read about your co-authors here, I've come across lots of self-help books, and I'm not sure about the quality of some of them. And the fact that we're talking to you and you've got all this experience, and as you mentioned out there, is that something that you feel passionately about? There does seem to be a lot of self-help books out there. Is that something that you want to kind of communicate from your experience?
I feel very strongly about it, yes, because of course, there are lots and lots of good books out there, and we do refer to lots of them and give the ideas from lots of them in this book. Our idea, though, is that there's more than one way of helping people, and most self-help books are just a one-idea book. They're based on a particular way of helping people that somebody wants to get across. But this is based on all the research.
Yeah,
and therefore allows people to use it much more like a buffet. You can choose what suits you.
Because a lot of books, it's almost like if you don't buy this book, then actually we've got the secret in the book to your life being changed, and this book's going to change your life completely.
I know. The whole point of this is to give people choice and also to explain things briefly and clearly, so that you can follow them up. We've given you the ways of following them up if you're interested.
Yeah.
But there's enough there for you to start with. It's got two very good ideas mixed together, I have to say, which we've called the mechanic and the gardener. So that when you're trying to get yourself back on course in your life, you can either think of yourself as a mechanic and find a tool to fix the problem with, so to speak, or you can think of yourself as somebody who's working to provide for themselves the best environment to help themselves along.
Yeah.
And be more like a gardener. Do you see what I mean?
I do. My other role as a pastor of a church, I come across people in a counselling situation on a lot of times, and there are some times when I feel like it's difficult to get somebody beyond where they are. And it has to come from them, doesn't it? So what I'm saying is that this book, I'm sure, is great, but the desire's got to be there in the first place for change, hasn't it?
or for understanding. Yeah. We've actually started the book. It's got three main sections. Mm. And the first one is about making sense more than changing anything, about understanding where you are now.
Yeah.
Clarifying what your values might be, accepting where you are at the moment. And then the second part of the book is about making your way. So still not about making changes. It's about providing a framework for your life, about the sorts of things you want to achieve, about becoming happier, or about knowing that everybody can be creative, not just special artists, about developing good relationships. So those two sections of the book, which really provide almost two-thirds of the book,
yeah.
Provide the background that then you can use for tackling difficulties if you have them. So it's a book for everyone, regardless of whether you've got difficulties in a way.
Yeah, because I think that those who have been through it and maybe come out the other side of whatever issues they've had in their life, that's a great place to be, isn't it? That's a fantastic place to help others out. And we do need some help in helping people.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's lots in the book about that too, about helping the people you're fond of and the people you're close to, people who turn to you for help, as well as helping yourself.
Yeah. Do you ever come across people who you feel like, you know, you're at a dead end with that person, that you feel that there's very little hope? We use the term troubled soul, don't we?
We do use that term. I've never found that clinically. Is that presuming that's what you meant rather than in one's ordinary life? I've always had the feeling that there are possibilities for change for everybody.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that, actually. If you think of it, as we grow older and as things around us change, there's always pressure to change. And there's always change going on. So thinking about how one can harness that helps one to get out of stuck positions and to help others out of them.
Yeah. Now, the three of you, as you mentioned there, do you each have your own kind of area that you fall into more naturally than one or the other? And do you play to your own strengths there?
I think we do, actually. And combining the strengths has certainly enabled us to write a much broader book with a lot more ideas than others. I was a specialist on anxiety disorders at one stage, and also on helping people who'd had very difficult childhoods and earlier lives.
Yeah.
And then Nick is somebody who's a tremendously experienced worker with people who've had various traumas and losses in their lives, as well as dealing with anxiety. And Tony's worked more with people who've been depressed, or those who've had eating disorders, with people who've had problems that come from when they're aging. So between us, we've got a very, very broad experience.
When it comes to anxiety, you touched on something there. It's something I think that I ignored in my life for a while because of my personality and the way I am. And I never felt that it was an issue to me. And actually recently, I think I've been experiencing not social anxiety, but certainly stress and anxiety about certain situations that may never happen. And I think it's had an effect on me physically as well, with my head. I've got headaches and stuff. So I'm being very honest with you now. I'm saying that I don't think most of us actually understand. We think that somebody who has anxiety looks a certain way, acts a certain way.
Oh, you're so right. And it's a really important point you're making, because it means that there are lots of different ways of helping people who are anxious. And, of course, mind and body fit together. So what you say about it affecting your body is very, very true. But it does mean that sometimes the standard ways of dealing with stress and anxiety and worry are not so useful to somebody as something else might be, like building self-confidence and self-esteem, or helping people get better at using and building supportive relationships, or time management skills when life is so full, you know, so that there are a whole lot of different things that can build together to help one feel less stressed and less anxious.
Some of these things that you're talking about, is this learned from experience from yourself? Working in top university and working in the NHS comes a little bit of anxiety, no doubt, and worry that comes with those roles. Sure you've learned a lot academically, but is there anything from your own experience in there?
Most definitely. Yeah. And from the frustration of discovering that you can't change things as quickly as you'd like to, or that the standard ways that other people suggest don't seem to work for you at the moment. That's another of the ideas behind this book. It gives you a much better way of choosing something that suits yourself, dropping this bit if you don't like it. But there are other ideas that you might be able to pick up. And different things suit people at different times.
Yeah.
I think it's even true that, you have the anxiety now might be different from the anxiety that I had 25 years ago. Mm. Different things will help me with it.
What effects does anxiety have physically on people, would you say?
One of the ones you mentioned is headaches. Physical tension is an enormously difficult problem for people who are anxious, and that also leads to interference with sleep, as you can imagine.
Yes.
You're probably aware of that. I mean, I think all of us have moments, don't we? 4 o'clock in the morning when you wake up and you think, oh no, there's this and there's that, and then all the other things tumble in on one all at once. And then, of course, you don't feel like eating, or you feel like eating too much because it calms you down temporarily. So the physical side of it can run riot as well as the psychological side.
And Gillian, do you think there's this kind of paradox at the moment that with great books like yours and other great books that you've alluded to as well in the book, the fact that we've got the internet with some professors and so on, and obviously some spurious stuff on TV and on the internet, but also some good stuff as well.
Yes.
We seem to have more information about where we are, yet this anxiety seems to be a massive issue, worry, stress, moods, addictions.
I think that's a really difficult problem to get to grips with, whether it's increasing or whether the willingness of people to talk more about it and to talk more openly and to reduce the stigma associated with talking about it has made us realize just how much is there all the time. It's so much easier to mention than it used to be, but at the same time there are huge numbers of pressures, especially with in the world in which we live at the moment, with the frightening things going on around us and in the environment, and things that we're helpless to change, as well as austerity in our country. It leads to very difficult life circumstances.
Yeah, you're right. And also, like you say, I mean, we know far more about what's going on in the world at the moment, which we wouldn't have done a few generations ago. And also there's Facebook groups of people getting together who have anxiety issues, and you wouldn't have known about people in America, maybe, who had anxiety problems as well. So it's...
And we must remember the technological changes that have happened too, because, people on... Once you're joined social media sites, it's really difficult to feel that you're ever alone, or that people can, or that you can switch it off and be on your own. People can get at you anytime.
Yeah. I do turn my phone off every now and then. I'll just say, if I'm at home with my family, that's it. The phone's going off, Gillian, that's it. And, we're in for a quiet evening. But even then, every now and then, there's a temptation to turn it back on and check it again. And it can be an issue, yes.
And I think for young adolescent people, it's particularly difficult. Yeah. And what we know from some of the research is that people can say things online that you would never dream of saying face-to-face, because actually when you can see somebody, you can see how much it distresses them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a real difficulty on the receiving end of those sorts of things.
Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time, but we really only skimmed the surface of the book, and there's so much in there. And as you say, there's the three main sections of the book there as well, which I think is going to help those that need the help, but also help the helpers. So I think, which is great. Gillian, thanks for coming. I really appreciate your time. The book's called Manage Your Mind. If you go onto tre.radio, you can order the book via our website there here in Spain and get a copy for yourself. Gillian, wish you all the very best and a very happy new year to you as well.
And to you. Thank you so much.
Stress-free and anxiety-free New Year, hopefully.
That'd be good.
Gillian, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.